kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining me, Cole Martin. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm alive and kicking.
Yay. Are you snowed in down there?
Yes. Well, not as bad as we were, but enough that rednecks are like, nope, bucket full of nope.
Well, you're in Kentucky, which is considered a southern state, so snowed in for you guys, I'm going to guess, like 3 inches.
Well, in general, like, we get a lot of snow because we're in the hills, and we're, like, at the foothills of the mountains. So, I mean, it's not unusual for us to, this time of year, have 8, 10, 12 inches of snow. We just be like, okay, whatever.
So this time, you're the part down south that knows what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah, and that means we shut the fuck down. Because we have nothing but one-lane dirt roads all over the place.
Well, gar darn it. That's not
an exaggeration. So, like, you can't plow that shit, and they wouldn't even if they could.
True.
And so we just kind of, we've been shut down. My kids have gone to school, like, 3 days this whole month. That's that. They went last Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and they've been out all this week, and they were out the week and a half before that. They were out 2 extra days for Christmas vacation. They were supposed to go 3 days that last week, and they only went 1 because they were expecting a snowstorm and too many kids had the flu.
Expecting a snowstorm closed the schools. Yeah.
That's basically the way it is because, I mean, we had a bus wreck last month, I think it was. And it literally went through the guardrail and over a hill and just was mangled. And that was perfectly clear day.
Well, that just means your bus drivers down there suck.
Also true.
Anyway, we have a hell of a show lined up. Later on in the episode, I am going to be chatting with Rick Lagnese of Warhorse Studios. They are the team behind Kingdom Come Deliverance, which is releasing next month. I'm super excited about that game. It was a really cool chat. You'll have to check that one out when the episode is out.
I won't be there for that one. I'll have to listen to it in retrospect. But that game, that game's got a lot of hype around it. I know a lot of people are excited for it, so it's probably a good interview.
So good. It looks so good. And just talking about it, I am so excited for it. An RPG that doesn't fuck around with like dragons and magic. It is more grounded in history and reality. And I'm excited to check it out. It'll be a nice change of pace.
Sounds exciting.
Good shit. But before then, a lot of news, a bunch of stuff. Yeah. Words, a lot of news happened this week. I think the biggest thing is earlier this week, Nintendo unveiled I think it's Labo or Labo. One of the two.
I feel like it should be Labo. Like it's Nintendo Lab.
Yeah. Labo. Like Nintendo Labo. Ha.
Yeah. That feels appropriate.
So it's basically a do-it-yourself cardboard set where you can create a variety of gadgets or doohickeys or toys and sync it up with software on your Switch to have these interactive toys.
I have questions about like the longevity of this shit because it's not cheap. Do you want to share the price?
Well, they have two different packs. The first one is a variety kit, which is going to have, the pieces and the software for an RC car, a fishing rod, a toy house, a toy motorbike, and a piano. All of that. So it's all the cardboard pieces, all the assembly, and the software is $69.99. They also have a robot kit, which is a wearable robot suit. I don't know what the fuck this thing does, but that's $79.99.
I actually saw that one in one of the videos I looked up for it. And it's like legit a box that you put on like a backpack. And it looked like there was something over the kid's eyes. I don't know if like it was supposed to be like 3D goggles in a sense or something. I couldn't really tell from the angle because they were really focusing on the giant square box on this kid's back. But, like, he had that, and then it looked like he was had something around his hands, and he was kind of punching and controlling a robot that way.
This shit crazy, though. Like, I'm interested in the piano one, like, building a piano out of cardboard, inserting your Nintendo Switch Joy-Con into it, and fucking playing a piano out of cardboard.
I can see engineering kids just, like, losing their shit over this. Because I know my oldest, they do engineering at school, and they are all time building little machines out of cardboard. And so, like, if she had a Switch, she would be like, oh my gosh, I just have to build everything for it now. So I could see that happening. But I just worry about, like, the longevity of paying a small fortune for something that's built out of cardboard and meant to be played with. Like, I saw in the one video, the kid was using it like a gas pedal. And I just know my heavy-footed little heathens would be like, whoop, and through
stomping
the floor
all
and
over
gone,
that
and
fucking
that's
thing.
That. And that's, you know, it's only a matter of time until, like, one of the dogs takes off with it and tries to use it as a bed or hides it under a couch or something. Like, I just, that's a lot for a cardboard peripheral. I can't say that word.
I mean, when you think about it, that $70 is getting you the materials to make 5 different things as well as the software.
The software is the bigger draw.
Yeah, the software is where all the money is pretty much going.
But I do worry, like I said, still just my kids would be the kind to be like, oh my gosh, she broke my fishing pole and now I can't play my fishing pole game anymore. And then I'd just be like, I'm not paying another $70 for another fucking fishing pole kit.
Well, Nintendo did say that they will be selling replacement cardboard kits.
Aren't they gracious?
Well, they're going to be, like, properly designed and properly, like, I'm assuming they're going to be perforated so that you have the proper pieces, have the instructions. Yeah. All. I mean, they're not just selling you plain ass cardboard. That'd be like the people who bitch like, oh, I bought my cat a cat scratcher and I had to pay $15 for fucking cardboard. Well, yeah, you're paying for, you know, putting it together and how your cat is going to use it. If you want to take a shitload of cardboard boxes, glue them all together and make it yourself, by all means, go ahead. I'd rather spend the $10-$15 and not make my own. So with this Nintendo Labo stuff, I can understand them wanting to sell the replacement kits because, of course, these are going to wear out. I'm going to assume that the replacement cardboard kits are not going to be $70 cardboard kits. I'm thinking maybe $20-$30. But I still think
I'm clearly a cheapskate because I'm just like, that's so what?
Or I'm sure, you know, once the first set is out, people are going to have instructions online of like how to make your own.
And that is, I think that's the more interesting aspect is the opportunities it's going to open up for creating different peripherals. I cannot say that word right. I'm going to quit trying to say it.
They call them Toy-Con instead of Joy-Con, Toy-Con, because Nintendo. I don't know.
I wish, this is one of the few times I wish I was recording so you could just see how hard I rolled my eyes. I need to walk onto the other side of the room and go pick them back up out of the floor now.
I don't know. I think they look pretty cool. I have a lot of friends now who have kids and they're like, you know, a year or two ago, I would see this thing and be like, who is this for? Why does this exist? And now that I have kids who, you know, exploratory little kids who are like, oh, starting to play with daddy's video games and starting to play with toys. This is for them.
Yeah, it is. I get it and I get the novelty of it. I just wish it was some other material. I have destructive ass kids, I think, and they're not even. They're not even as bad as some of the others in the family, but I can imagine how fast they would just wreck the shit out of these things.
I can only imagine how expensive these things would be if they were made of plastic or metal.
That is true.
They would be hundreds of dollars.
You would know it was going to hang around.
Well, this will teach your kids to be gentle with their shit, and if they're not, then they broke their toys and they won't get to play with it again until they cut out their own cardboard pieces to create their own replacement.
That would be me, too. I'd be like, Look, I found you a refrigerator box out behind the gas station and have fun.
Make your shit, that'd kids.
That's the best they could do. Yeah. Use your imagination. It's got better than 4K graphics. Now what?
Make your shit and leave me the fuck alone. Mommy's got a pain.
Them parent of the year awards don't earn themselves. Okay.
So as a mother, what do you think of this stuff? Is this something that, like, if you had a Switch, you would look into picking up? Do you see the appeal and the draw in these things?
I do. As a mother, like, my oldest, she's really into, you know, the whole do-it-yourself type things and engineering and all that. And I could see her just being like, yeah, I totally want to make my own Toy-Cons. But...
you said Toy-Con.
I also rolled my eyes again, so be right back. I gotta go get them. As a responsible adult, which I am not prone to being, but I have my moments. And so right now I'm gonna have a moment where I just look at that and go, it's cardboard, it's gonna get destroyed. Like the first time number three gets mad that she didn't win a race, something's broken. Or the first time I say, go put that up before it gets broken. And then I go in the room the next day and it's flat and under the bed.
Yeah.
I know that kind of shit would happen. And it just seems pricey for all that. Even though, like, I know the whole, you know, the software and everything, which is a good thing. Like, if it was just, oh, here's a cardboard, make it yourself item, have fun with that. And hope that maybe somebody develops a game for it. That would be problematic.
Yeah, true. I still think, like, if your kids are going to get pissed and break shit, I would rather it be cardboard than an actual expensive toy.
I would like for it to be harder to break than cardboard. I've seen number three have some moments.
Well, this ain't our childhood where all the toys are made out of, like, hard metal and unbreakable plastic. Like, everything is fragile today.
Like, got her a bike a couple years ago, and, like, within a couple of months of just normal toddler usage, it was broken. And I was like, the fuck? That shit's too expensive for that. They're just, they don't make it like they used to, Joe.
Very true.
Very, and now we sound cool.
Very true. Anyway, there is more news to talk about this week. After a few weeks off, backward compatibility updates have returned to the Xbox platform. A weird batch of games this week. Today, on Thursday, was Magic the Gathering Duels of the Planeswalkers, Magic the Gathering Duels of the Planeswalkers 2013, Magic the Gathering Duels of the Planeswalkers 2014. So three different Magic the Gathering games in one day.
I'm sure somebody is really fucking excited about that. Oh, I don't know who.
Our old co-host, Chris, was like, oh my god, I get to be addicted to these all over again.
As soon as you said our old co-host, I knew you were going to say Chris. I knew it.
No, who else would it be? CJ?
Right. Yeah. No, because he's going to be like, I'm going to go get some gamer score in this. That's that.
Those only have 200 gamer score, maybe 400. I can't get enough out of those. I think Tuesday had a much better lineup of games with Sniper Elite V2, Driver San Francisco, and Far Cry 2.
I've never played the old Far Cry games.
Well, Far Cry 2 is on sale for, I think, $6 for gold members this week.
It's actually a pretty good price.
Yeah, and Far Cry 3 is, I think, $7 or $8.
I was thinking of picking up Dear Esther from the sale. That's the only thing I had looked at that was on sale this week that I was like, because it's a walking sim.
So oh, yeah, there's a decent amount of Xbox titles on sale. A lot of walk-sploration stuff.
59 adventure games.
That is a lot.
And you want to know the terrible part is that I looked at it and I have 28 of them already. And I was like, well, shit.
What did I buy? I bought a Town of Light.
Oh, I loved Town of Light.
That was what, $10 on sale?
Yeah, I think so. It's so good.
There's another one. What the hell was the other one I got? Rememoried. I got that one.
Rememoried isn't bad. It's a quick completion, but I thought the mechanics were pretty neat.
I'm sure I'll get to it eventually. Oh, there was one more, Chaos on Deponia. I got that one as well. So I bought three out of the sale.
You're going to like Chaos on Deponia.
And I'm pretty sure I own all of the others.
You didn't sit into account like I did?
No. This week I hit 1,640 games on my console, so counting shit is just too much work anymore.
I had a friend, he was all like, oh, I don't have enough space on my hard drive. And I'm like, okay, so how many games do you have? He's like, 18.
Oh.
And I was like, God damn, I feel bad for you.
18.
18 whole games.
Hot diggity. I'm looking into getting another 8-terabyte hard drive to replace my 4. And I'll use that 4 to replace the 1 that I have hooked up.
My birthday's coming up if anybody wants to help me in the terabyte division.
So is mine, March. So,
mine's closer.
Oh, when's yours?
February 6th.
Aw, happy early birthday.
No, I don't want to talk about how old I am, though.
Ashley's is on the 12th.
Oh, look there.
Yeah, so she gets birthday on the 12th, Valentine's Day on the 14th.
That's what happens to David. I feel awful for him because my birthday is on the 6th, Valentine's Day is on the 14th, and our anniversary is on the 28th.
Well, that's your own fault for loading up February.
Right?
See, like,
what?
Her birthday is the 12th, Valentine's Day on the 14th, and then my birthday is March 18th. And to kind of even things out, we got our anniversary is March 16th. So anniversary is 2 days away from my birthday. Valentine's Day is 2 days away from her birthday.
Wow.
Plus 316. My anniversary is Stone Cold Steve Austin. God. Oh, hell yeah. That is literally one of the reasons that we picked March 16th.
Wow.
Stone Cold. Hell yeah. He gave me a retweet the one year.
He sounds so excited.
Now I'm a fancy podcaster, and he still wouldn't come on my show. Anyway, some other news. They already announced the Game Pass editions for February, a bit early on this one, surprisingly, mm-hmm. but people were getting notices that like WWE 2K16 and Metal Gear Solid 5 were leaving Game Pass at the end of the month.
WWE 2K16 is too.
Yeah. NBA.
But they're being replaced.
Yeah. NBA 2K16 left at the end of December, and WWE 2K16 is leaving at the end of January. Mm-hmm. But they are both being replaced with NBA 2K17 and WWE 2K17, which is pretty nice of them to do. Some of the other additions for Xbox One include Darksiders 2 Definitive Edition, Halo Wars 2, Letter Quest Remastered, Rime, and Riptide GP Renegade. And then Xbox 360 is getting Fable Anniversary.
Oh.
So a pretty solid additions to the Game Pass library.
I'm excited about Halo Wars 2, mostly because I won the season pass, but I never won the game.
Really?
And so now I'm going to get to play it.
How did you win just the season pass?
They were, when it launched, Xbox did one of their big launch party things on Mixer, and they gave it away, but they only gave away the season pass, not the whole game. So that's all I got. And that was a cruel trick, because when Gears of War came out, they gave away the Ultimate Edition, and I won that. And so I was hoping to snag Halo Wars 2, but I only got half of it.
Bottom line is, you win too much shit.
I win a lot of shit. And I don't win as much as I
think that's why you're on the show now.
Basically, I won too much shit. You figured it was easier to just give me shit than to make me win shit. And other people get to win shit now.
Now you get to earn your shit. And say yeah, me
now
time.
I have to actually work for that shit.
Speaking of free shit, EA Access just got the game Black added to the vault. So we now have Xbox One, Xbox 360, and OG Xbox games all in EA Access.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I'll say.
Even if it's just one.
I'll say, as much as EA has been fucking up with so much stuff lately, EA Access is still worth every penny.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Absolutely.
And I'm pretty sure that NBA Live 18 is going to be joining the vault very, very soon as well.
I'm hoping The Sims. It's only like EA game I've wanted in a while, and I almost got it on sale. Then I chickened out because I feel bad spending money on myself around Christmas because I got kids' birthdays and shit.
No.
And so I didn't do it. And now I'm just sitting here like, I really need The Sims in my life. So maybe it'll go into the vault.
I don't think The Sims is going to be added probably until the fall, if not later.
Probably not.
Just because
it is one of them that I expect the least to make it to the vault very soon.
Yeah. I mean, it'll get there eventually. It's just a matter of when. I think that one will be a bit longer than usual. But NBA Live, we saw a bunch of sales on over the holidays. It came out at a $40 game. I've already seen it like permanent price cut down to $30 in most places. And it's on sale this week for $7. That fucking thing is going to be in the vault. I'm going to say by the end of February, it'll be in the vault. That's my guess.
Yeah, I'd agree to that.
Yeah, I think word got out that NBA Live is a lot better this year than it's been in past years. And with 2K getting as much backlash as they've had over like all the as much shit as EA gets for microtransactions, NBA 2K17 is awful with microtransactions to the point where you could pay real money to like get a fucking haircut in the game. Real money for that shit. It's insane. I just, whatever. Anyway, last bit of news I have is images surfaced this week of what appears to be a brand new Xbox Elite controller. Have you seen these pictures?
Indeed, I have.
The original model has been out of stock pretty much everywhere for, I'd say, a month or two now. I know around the holidays, everyone was looking for them. They were sold out everywhere. A lot of people think that Microsoft was just trying to sell through their stock to make room for the new model. Images that showed up they look very, very legit. I mean, it's very clearly an Xbox controller. It looks like a prototype. It doesn't seem as polished. But some of the features that are supposedly being talked about for the redesigned controller have new grips to it. So instead of just the back, it looks like they wrap around to the front as well. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to have a USB-C port for charging instead of the, USB mini, whatever it is. Bluetooth support for Windows 10 PCs. 3 different levels to the hair trigger locks, which is interesting. And a toggle for 3 profiles instead of 2. One of the images also showed what appeared to be some form of mechanism to allow you to adjust the tension of the analog sticks.
Oh.
Which would be amazing if it's true.
Yeah, that's a pretty big deal. I would be afraid of breaking it.
Yeah, my biggest gripe with the Xbox One controller since the day they came out is that the analog sticks are just way too damn loose.
Yeah. I could see that argument.
That's always been my gripe. When the Xbox One first came out and people still played the 360 a lot, you would play something like Forza 5 on the Xbox One with the awful analog sticks on these controllers, and then go back to the 360 and play like Forza Horizon with the nice, tight, firm analog sticks, and it's a whole different world. I don't know who at Microsoft made the decision to change the tension on the analog sticks, but I've been saying for years, it is my only gripe with the controller. They're just terrible.
I know that I had problems with stick drift on the 360, but nothing like I've had on the One. Like, at least I would have a controller for a good, year or so before I have any issues out of it. And now it's like I'm killing them with stick drift every 2 or 3 months.
See, even on the 360, I got the Halo 4 limited edition system. Both of the controllers out of the box had stick drift on the 360. Yeah.
And see, I didn't have that much trouble. Like, that's one of the things too I noticed when the kids still have a 360, and when I'm trying to like navigate the menus and stuff, I'm like, oh, it's so sluggish because it the tension is so high that I'm not used to it anymore, and it doesn't it just feels off because of how I'm used to the one controllers and how they're just like, they're kind of flimsy and they flop around wherever, which is actually kind of better for me as far as arthritis goes. Cause you know, I'm old and broken. So it's easier to just like have it kind of move at the drop of a hat. But I can see the benefit to wanting to tighten that up.
Now, some kind of mechanism that allows you to adjust it sounds amazing. And if they could get it to work, that would be worth, even if they increase the price of the Elite controller, I would probably rebuy it just for that feature alone.
Yeah, for me, what's got my attention the most is the grips. Because again, old and arthritic, and I dropped it. And so I saw the grips and I was like, look, okay. Number one, they're ugly as sin. Number two, they're useful as fuck. And I can take function over form. I can't. Especially when it comes to an expensive-ass controller that I know I'm going to drop at least 10 times a week.
Yeah.
If it cuts down, like, dropping it once, I'm like, oh, so worth it.
I guess the big question...
My husband is threatened to get lanyards for my controller.
Oh, God, that'd be funny. I think the biggest question is if they're going to redesign the bumper mechanism, because one of the biggest gripes people have with Xbox One controllers, I haven't run into this because I don't, you know, maul my controllers, is that the bumpers, the piece that puts them in there are made of plastic, so they snap very easily.
I have killed a couple bumpers.
Yeah.
Because I dropped them. So I think that might be, too, one of the reasons why I was kind of like, other than price, put off by the Elite controllers. Because in my head, it's like, oh, if I could, you know, like map some of the buttons, it might help with playing some of the games that I struggle with. Because, you know, the button options just aren't viable for somebody with my hands being what they are. But if I have to worry that, you know, the bumpers, if I'm going to drop a $150 controller and break a plastic piece, you know, inside of an expensive ass controller, that's problematic. And we get shitty warranties in the US. So we can't just take that shit back after like 6 months and be like, oh, I broke it. Give me another one.
No, that's why I get it at Best Buy with their 2-year replacement plan for like $20.
Redneck Land ain't got any Best Buys though.
Or like, online. You have a computer. You have the internet tubes.
That is a good point that you could order it online.
As long as there's not, you know, 3 inches of snow out, you should get it in the mail, all right?
Rip my watercolors.
Also, I love the fact that I looked away from the chat to read that Nintendo email and get all the details there. I look back and there's like a fucking screen full of people talking.
Yeah.
So I miss
all of them. They're all just saying hi to each other. They're being friendly and we suck. And we're just like, nah, these people. Like
Carnage saying that you break your controllers for rage quitting at Walking Sims.
I mean, I get jelly, okay? I want to be able to walk like a Walking Sim.
So as long as you don't, you know, smash your controller, your new Elite controller, whenever it comes out, I'm thinking they're going to announce it either at GDC or E3. I would assume the earlier the better, just because of how hard it is to find Elite anymore.
That does make sense.
So, fingers crossed, the sooner the better, and if it's sometime in March, it'd be another fantastic birthday present for me, listeners. So, you know, buy me shit. But yeah, adjustable tension would be incredible. As much as I shit on the DualShock 4 and the DualShock controller in general, because I hate that fucking thing, their tighter thumbsticks on the PS4 controller are fantastic compared to the PS3. Like, they fixed their analog stick problem, and Microsoft created an analog stick problem. It's like they swapped places, and I don't know why.
That seems fucking to have happened a lot this generation for some odd reason.
No shit. And another thing for people who hate DualShock controllers, this week, Hori announced that they're going to be releasing the first third-party wireless PlayStation 4 controller, and it's shaped like an Xbox controller.
Because same. People really hate the PlayStation controllers.
I have always hated the DualShock. Like, dating back to the PS1, I hated the DualShock. I hated the controller. So bulky, so uncomfortable. it's been slightly improved over the years, but I still think it's trash. And I hate the symmetrical analog sticks on it. I hate it. Hate it, hate it, hate it.
Yeah.
When I'm playing a game, I want the primary direction to be where my thumb rests naturally, not arched over to the side.
I mean, to be fair, my thumbs don't arch naturally anyway, so maybe that would have worked better for me, and I just didn't know it, but I do find the Xbox controllers far more comfortable. I've even seen, like, people on forums trying to use the Bluetooth Xbox controllers with some kind of accessory that makes them viable for PlayStations.
Yeah, I don't know how much this hoary pad is going to be, but I'm going to look into it just because it's shaped like an Xbox controller. It has the sticks offset like an Xbox controller, and it's not a fucking DualShock. So I'm excited about that. But any other news you wanted to talk about this week?
No, nothing exciting happening that I'm aware of beyond what we have covered.
Nice. Well, we talked about winning free shit on the show, and it's been a while since we've done this, mainly because of, like, MagFest and holidays and all that shit. Mm-hmm. But this week, we are giving away copies of Boom Ball 3 for Kinect on Xbox One. Thanks to the awesome people at Virtual Air Guitar Company, we jumped on the Twitters and told you to email us telling us why you wanted the game. We got two people who emailed in. I guess those are the last two people who still own Kinects. First one is Oroto Tomato, who says, why I want it. Let me tell you, my Kinect has been abandoned for ages. I won't say it's collecting dust because I always put a little blanket on top to protect that little darling of mine. But a reason to use it again? Yes. But more than that, Boomball is a statement. A statement that just because the parents abandon their own child, the games industry won't. We will foster the Kinect. We will remember all the good it has done. I mean, how many articles about how Kinect is helping certain people in certain ways? From mental health to physical health, the Kinect has been used in various forms with great results. It's a great piece of technology. It died too soon. And without the proper investment, without the proper love it deserved, it uses no more than a small gimmick in games. Because unfortunately, the gaming industry takes ages to catch up. They take forever to take new risks, too comfortable selling their first-person shooter war games over and over, afraid to dive into the creativity pool, and the Kinect had a vast pool that remains unused. I believe in a Kinect 3, maybe in the next decade, maybe in some sort of cooperation with the VR stuff. Together, they will bring forth the next childhood of video games, and we will both be there to see it happen. SML, man. Also, hi, Happy New Year, you fuckers.
Happy New Year, fuckers. Okay.
thanks, Eroto. The other email we got is from Eric Trill, who says, the reason I want Boomball 3 is because my wife is pregnant and apparently I've gained some sympathy weight. Yes, my wife told me a couple days ago that I could use to lose a few pounds. Personally, I blame the delicious food from the holidays for the, quote, few pounds I've gained. So winning a copy of Boomball 3 would get me off my ass and get me to move around, which would also make my wife happy, while still being able to play my Xbox, which would make me happy. Sounds like a win-win situation. I still have my day one Xbox One, so it would give me a good reason to use the Kinect. As always, thank you for the chance. Good news, Eric and Eroto. You're both getting a copy of the game.
Yay!
See, when you don't do a giveaway for a while, when you don't do a giveaway for a while and no one emails in, it's easier for people to win shit.
Right?
Who'da thunk?
Congratulations.
So yes, congrats to everybody who emailed and both of you who got a game. Good stuff. So what do you think of the Kinect? Do you think that it died too early?
Very much so. My kids love the Kinect, and when we bought our Xbox, we bought the one without the Kinect, though, just because we couldn't afford the more expensive one with it. And in my head, I was like, oh, well, we'll get a Kinect off eBay in, you know, a few months or whatever. I even bought some Kinect games that were on sale, just like, oh, we'll get one eventually. And then we never got one. Like, I can't find one to save myself because where they're discontinued now, everybody's like, oh, I have a Kinect. $200. And I'm like, well, fuck, I could have paid that and start with. Had my own.
The funny thing is, I'm pretty sure I could find a Kinect fairly easily.
I want it's your the luck.
Adapter. Like, are you seriously looking for a Kinect?
Yeah, I'd like to get the kids a Kinect at some point.
Do you have an original Xbox One model?
I do. I have the original Xbox still.
Well, then I'll check. My landlord owns a game store. I'll ask him if he has any Kinects, because last I saw, he was selling them for like 50, 60 bucks.
I would happily pick one up in that price range for the, like, number one loves dance games. She actually was still using her Kinect with the 360 in her room just like 2 days ago playing Dance Central. So she would lose her mind if she could finally play Dance Central that I bought 2 years ago.
Damn.
Yeah, it's just sitting there on the ready to install.
There was a stretch of time where you could get one from GameStop for $20.
I really wish I had got one then. I don't know if it was a case of ours never had them in stock or what, but I do remember looking for them at that time.
Possible. But yeah, the biggest thing now is finding a fucking adapter for the thing, because they discontinued those pretty much right when the Xbox One X came out. So yeah. Everybody is upgrading to an X. Everybody wants to use their Kinect with their X. Nobody could find an adapter.
Yeah. That was a shame. Like, it was one thing to straight up just, like, kill the Kinect and be like, oh, we're stopping any support for the Kinect, and it just is what it is. But no, they had to be like, we're going to torture it brutally, and we're going to, like, mutilate your ports, and then we're going to piss on your adapters, and yeah, screw you for still liking to be physical while playing a game.
Yeah, fuck you. For using something that Microsoft claimed would be integral to the console and never be stripped away. God, it pisses me off so much. Like, I love Xbox. I love my Xbox One. I hate what Xbox has been doing over the past years with how they're treating the console and the early adopters. If you bought one of these systems when they first launched, it seems Microsoft doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because one of the big reasons I bought the Xbox One, and I love the Xbox One so much, was the fucking Snap feature.
People are still mad about the Snap. I honestly never used it, but there have been a few times I'm like, well, that would have been useful right about now.
All the times I used to watch a wrestling pay-per-view and have a football game snapped. So I could watch both at the same time. Or, I have a bunch of shit on TV I gotta watch, but I have a bunch of games I gotta play. I could do both.
Yeah.
I miss that. I miss being able to...
I have ADD. I can't do that. I would just be like, squirrel the whole time. Not be able to keep up with either of it.
It has me so angry that they've just stripped away the Kinect features. They've stripped away Snap. So much stuff that made that system so awesome and unique is gone. Like, the early commercials for the system is like, Xbox, snap this. And you can't do that anymore. I remember Sony faced a lawsuit, and they actually settled. They had some kind of class action lawsuit, and they settled over the other OS feature being removed from the PS3. Do you remember what that was?
I'm not familiar with this, no.
Basically, when the PS3 first launched, and for a couple years afterwards, you could install Linux on it.
Really?
And just do whatever you wanted. But over time, they just removed the feature because apparently not enough people used it. But, it wasn't something that they heavily advertised, but it was a feature. It was something that they touted, something on the box, like other OS feature, install Linux, do this. They removed it, and they faced a lawsuit. I'm curious when someone's going to try filing a lawsuit against Xbox for all these people who bought their consoles for Kinect functionality and for Snap functionality, and they're gone. Like, features that people dropped $500 on a console for, gone.
Well, because one of the things they made a big deal was, you can use Skype and play together and have video. That was actually, like, one of the things that I was pretty excited about. But because we didn't get a Kinect, we ended up not using it. But I could see people being pissed about that, like, if they were expecting to do video calls while playing a game.
Yeah.
With a family member or something that's overseas.
I want to watch TV and play games again.
The feels.
Like, I'm at the point where I'm tempted to, like, get a shitty 20-inch TV and put it next to my TV so I could have my own ghetto Snap feature back.
I mean, it makes sense because, like, when I'm on the computer, I have two monitors and I do separate things and multitask. And I'd like to be able to multitask on the Xbox too.
Yeah, especially since that was a fucking feature of the goddamn thing when it came out.
That is one of the things like I'd even complained about to my husband. I was like, oh, I might get a tablet just so when I'm on the other side of the room, because it's just the Xbox there, and I used to have a laptop and be able to sit over there and do whatever's doing on the laptop while playing on the Xbox too. And now that we've got it set up where I've got a workstation with an actual desktop PC and everything, I can't do that anymore. And my eyes aren't good enough for me to sit on one side of the room and see the TV on the other. So I can't, you know, work and play a game while I'm waiting for something to upload without having to literally go back and forth across the room. That may not sound like a big deal to people who can walk well, but I'm not capable of that. And I use a cane, and getting my cane out and getting up to walk across the room is a bitch.
You privileged fucks.
I need to be able to multitask on both sides of the living room.
Very true. Anyway, we do have some reviews we should take care of. Do you want to get into those?
Fuck it, let's go.
Cool. First game to talk about tonight is called Full Metal Furies, developed and published by Cellar Door Games. It released January 17th on Xbox One and Steam for $19.99. From the creators of Rogue Legacy comes a true cooperative action RPG. Full Metal Furies puts an emphasis on team play with unique combat system where everyone is important. Play on the couch, alone, or with friends, or make it an online party for up to four players. Playing this one earlier with Carnage, of all people, he enjoyed the fact that the game was as full of puns as he is. Oh,
God. Not playing. Thanks. Sorry.
So, first off, the game is an action RPG, very much in the vein of something like Castle Crashers, beat-em-up style game. There are four different characters, four different unique classes. There is a tank who pretty much fights with a shield. There is a fighter who focuses on attacking with a hammer and having counterattacks. There is a sniper who deals with long-distance shots, although very slow. There's an engineer who deals with close-range gunplay, as well as little goodies and gadgets that you could chuck out. Carnage was using the engineer. One of the abilities there lets you throw out like a little robot with a radius that just shoots whatever enemies show up in there. So that's pretty fun. I enjoyed my time with the fighter. Gameplay is, it's all level based. So you go into a level, you fight through the stage, you take care of whatever final boss wave or enemy wave is at the end, and you move on. In between levels, there's a hub world you could go to with tons of options in terms of character upgrades, various weapons that you can purchase as you unlock them through the game. Each of the characters has their own unique stats, so you could focus on leveling up everybody or just focus on one if you want. One of the other draws to this game is the cooperation, in that everybody needs to be used in this game. Enemies will have a colored shield around them, which will correlate to one of the player characters. That shield can only be destroyed by the proper character. So while Carnage and I were playing, his were green, mine were red. Carnage had this fantastic, problem always attacking my guys.
That sounds like something.
When the green shield guys would be running around, but it's a good way to encourage everyone to not only be invested in the game and what's going on, but to also participate instead of one guy hanging back and just waiting and everyone else taking care of things. This keeps everybody involved and everybody playing. Another way that this is a, quote, true cooperative game is everything is shared. Money drops, everybody gets it.
Oh.
Health drops, everybody gets it. Any kind of abilities, everybody gets it. If you unlock an item at the end of a stage, everybody gets it. So nobody's fighting over money drops. Nobody's fighting over item drops. Everybody gets everything. So if your buddy is, you know, fighting two guys and getting low on health, there's a health pack by you, pick it up because they get healed.
That sounds like it was developed by either a parent with siblings that fight over shit in games, or was a sibling that fought over shit in games.
Probably. gameplay itself, again, just standard action RPG, what you would expect out of a game like this. I enjoy the fact that each of the characters have their own unique fighting styles and abilities. X button in the game is like a standard attack. Y button is a heavier or like just an alternate attack. The A button is some form of evade ability, whether it's like a dodge roll or the fighter has like a jump away. And one of the items you can unlock later in the game actually changes his from just a jump away to like a dive bomb attack. So the various equipment you can unlock through the game can drastically change your abilities. Like the one weapon I earned early in the game switched my hammer to a burning hammer. So every now and then the enemies that I attack will catch fire and take persistent damage as the level goes on. Overworld in the game, there's an overworld map and you jump from stage to stage, clearing out everything. Every now and then it'll have branching paths with, some type of arena battle or an extra difficult set of enemies you gotta get through. It's enough to keep things fairly open-ended and exploring areas instead of just following a straight path. So it encourages just being experimental and even to an extent grinding through levels, because some of the upgrades in the game could get fairly expensive. The difficulty might be one of my only gripes with the game, just because even in single player, it seems to throw a handful of enemies at you at a time to the point where it's just like one or two too many. Mm. So if you're on your game and you're dodging and you're using your abilities, you could make it through, but a lot of times you'll just get overwhelmed and die. They do have options in the game to turn on a story mode, which makes things a lot easier, but it also reduces the money you earn. The game is packed with options as well. They have, you know, they have like colorblind options in there. They have, a setting in there for people who are hearing impaired.
Oh, nice.
So it's like they seem to take care of all of the bases in this game. And most importantly, the game is fun. The combat in the game is satisfying. Leveling up and earning unlocks is, you know, they're constantly drip feeding you stuff to keep you invested and keep you playing. The writing is hilarious. Carnage would skip through all the story stuff, but when I was reading it, it was fucking hilarious. Each of the characters has their own unique style and sense of humor. It's just overall a really, really good game. And considering it's from the people who made Rogue Legacy, which is like one of the all-time classic roguelites in my eyes, I think Full Metal Furies is an absolute must-own game for $20.
Nice.
Yeah, really, really, really good stuff. And considering that as of right now, it's an Xbox console exclusive, fucking buy this. Support it. Please, people. Plus, I want people to play with. So,
buy it and play with me. Yeah, I didn't realize it was online. I'd seen it some, but I didn't realize it had online.
Yeah, really good stuff, too. So, yeah, $20, Full Metal Furies is an absolute definite buy it. It is awesome. Really good stuff.
Awesome.
Next game to talk about is called The Vanishing of Ethan Carter, developed and published by The Astronauts. Released January 19th on Xbox One for $19.99. You play as Paul Prospero, an occult-minded detective who receives a disturbing letter from Ethan Carter. Realizing the boy is in grave danger, Paul arrives at Ethan's home of Red Creek Valley, where things turn out to be even worse than he imagined. Ethan has vanished in the wake of a brutal murder, which Paul quickly discerns might not be the only local murder worth looking into. Cole, tell me about this game.
Holy shit, this game is gorgeous. I have like I said earlier, I just have the fat original Xbox One. So I didn't even get I don't know if this is upgraded for 4K or not, but I was stuck in 1080p land, and I'm still just taking my time as I walk through this game and just sitting and looking at the sun over the water or looking at the trees and getting up close to the foliage because I just wanted to look at this game. Now, once you get past the frequent breaks of, you know, just sitting around and being stunned by how pretty it is, the Vanishing of Ethan Carter is a mystery with supernatural elements to it. As you mentioned in the summary, you play as Paul Prospero, and he is a supernatural detective, and he is tasked with uncovering what's happened to Ethan, who is a child who has shown some supernatural tendencies of his own. Paul does have the ability, as he explores this world, to see both the past and the present. So as you're exploring, there will be items littered throughout the world that you can interact with that will give you glimpses into the past. And this is how you uncover clues and solve puzzles in order to, determine what's really happened here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to give away any spoilers, so I'm trying to choose my words carefully. The game is entirely open world, and once you start it, you will never see a loading screen while you're playing. It is all available, and it is meant for you to explore it at your own whimsy. If you want to, just toddle around and look at things and pick up clues and backstory, you can do that. If you come across a puzzle and you're working on it, but you're not really sure of the next step and you want to go wander around and look for something else until you can, think about that puzzle some more, you can do that. You are not tied to an area just because you're working on a puzzle in it. You can come and go to it as you please, which was really helpful because I'm the kind of person who likes to kind of just sit and mull over clues and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't getting into a position where I'm like, oh, I'm stuck. I'm just going to turn the game off and go do something else while I think about it, which I do a lot. And this time I was just like, I'm just going to go walk over here and look around for a little while until I think of it and then come back to it. And it's perfectly okay to do that. You can do the puzzles in any order that you want. You are not limited to being like, oh, well, I found the dead body here and now I have to solve this murder mystery before I can move on. No, if I look at that and I go, okay, well, I've inspected this and I don't have any fucking idea what I'm going to do. So I'm just going to go walk off and pretend I didn't see the severed legs on the train track for right now.
Yeah, severed legs are just easy to ignore most of the time.
Yeah, I'm just like, this thing.
Them again.
I'm going to go wander away and then I'll figure out who killed Travis tomorrow, maybe. Rip Travis.
Clearly nothing important.
Yeah, this is a thing. It happens.
And, fuck him. He has no legs. He ain't going anywhere.
Exactly. He's not going anywhere. So you can totally come back to it and just do it whenever you feel ready to. But it was nice to not just be tied down in the game. Like, I was never stuck. Yeah, I didn't know a solution here or there right off the top of my head. Fine, I'll go do something else until it comes to me. I was never just stuck and felt like I couldn't play or I couldn't progress. I could just go do something else for a few minutes, which was really nice. Even though the game makes a big deal, though, that it doesn't hold your hand for these puzzles and it gives you entire freedom, That's not to say there isn't like any kind of clues. I found it incredibly hard to miss shit. Like, there's one instance where you see a train, like a rail car, and it just says crank in the middle, and you walk up with a little question mark, and you walk up and you inspect it, and then the word crank just like goes full-blown 90s pop-up ads all over the screen, and you're like, okay, I get it. I think I need to find a crank. I'm good now.
Nice.
Okay.
Just a minor hint, I guess.
Yeah, thanks for not holding my hand. I don't know how I would have ever figured out to go get a crank on my own. Yeah, it's kind of odd given that the game is very, do it your own way and have your freedom. And it was just kind of like, by the way, there are hot, sexy cranks in your area and you need to find one.
Oh, God.
It was probably the only thing, though, about the game that I could even complain about is just that when it really wants you to know that there's a clue there, it will really make your attention aware of it. while solving the murders and using Paul's ability to see like past and present, this really set up some amazing puzzles, though. Like, in one instance, you're working through a house that has burned down, and you're going, like, I legit had to get pencil and paper for this puzzle and draw out the house. And the way that it works is when you get to each threshold for a new room, you can switch between past and present views of that room. And so you have to, like, align the rooms up according to how they were before it burned in order to progress through. And so it was just a really neat concept. I mean, we see the whole, a glimpse of the past juxtaposed over current, vision of what an area looks like. But it was really neat to have it actually be a portion of the puzzle that you had to manipulate it a certain way to get through anything.
Gotcha.
It's a really neat way to play a game that's otherwise just walk and look. it adds a new element to it. On top of the whole walk and look thing, if you find yourself really just staring at everything and wanting to poke at it more as opposed to being bothered by dead bodies on tracks, you can play in free roam and just load the game up and wander at your leisure and have nothing in your way.
That works.
Yeah. So I think there's some collectibles for the achievements. I didn't complete it yet, but that would probably be an ideal way to find some of the more collectible type achievement solutions. All the achievements are marked secret. So, I hope you've got an account with TA if you're going for the completion on this game, because otherwise you don't know what the fuck they are.
Nice. So overall, for $20, what do you think about this one?
This is an absolute buy it. It really is. It's a unique murder mystery the murders are part of it, but also there's just mystery elements, and the way that the mystery is and the puzzles, they use the supernatural elements to hold it all together. It's just really well done. So I like this game a lot. Definitely buy it.
Nice. And you mentioned you weren't sure if it had Xbox One X enhancements.
Yeah, sure.
It does. It is Ultra 4K for Xbox One X.
Nice. I knew when I went into the settings that it gave me the option of 1080p, and then it was just like, oh, you don't have a nice Xbox, so fuck you. You can't change this setting.
Suck it.
I assumed that there was probably enhancements for it. So that's good. It's gorgeous anyway. Like, I don't know how it could be even more improved.
Oh, man. Good stuff. I definitely want to check that one out myself. It's one of those games where I'm bummed we only got one copy of it.
I'm glad there was no embargo, because I was just taking screenshots. I was just like, this is pretty. Click. This is pretty. Click.
Nice. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is called 2064 Read Only Memories, developed and published by Midboss. This one released January 17th on Xbox One for $19.99. Neo San Francisco, 2064 AD. Your life as a struggling journalist is interrupted by the world's first sapient machine, a ROM named Turing. Together, you will encounter a colorful cast of locals and overcome challenges as you uncover the city's secrets behind the overlapping futures of technology and humanity. Can you survive in Neo San Francisco, or will the mystery go unsolved? Ooh, our friend Dark Mika covered this one, wrote in her review, and this is what she has to say. 2064 Read Only Memories is a point-and-click detective mystery game. You play as your own maid character in Neo San Francisco in, you guessed it, 2064. Like the title, I get it.
Surprise!
You are a journalist, a term used fairly loosely in this case, and you get a mysterious robot visitor one night telling you its creator, your friend, has been kidnapped. Up to the two of you to find him no matter how roundabout the case gets. Controls are pretty good, providing you the use of the D-pad instead of the analog stick. Analog acts like a mouse moving around the screen, but the D-pad highlights an item you can interact with, and just using the D-pad, it will move from one item to the next, which makes the game significantly easier. Start off using the analog stick because, well, it's an Xbox, we've been doing that for years, possibly decades now. That doesn't really work for shit, it's just not set up that well for it, but the D-pad works freaking wonders. There's a fairly expansive soundtrack in the game as well, which you can listen to while in the game. Just chill out to some awesome music anytime you want via a pair of headphones you get at the very start of the game. Start off with only a few songs, but as you complete areas of the game, you get more music added in. When you finally get to the end of the game, you can listen to all the different soundtracks as you please. If any of you played Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, the vibes that game gave you is the vibes I got from this, but instead of the action star bit, it's just sci-fi robot stuff. With the music to boot, I really liked it. The characters are all very colorful and unique with their own personalities. They're all even voice acted. A handful of them even have relationships with you that you can affect by being kind or a dick to them. Being a dick is rather funny, or maybe I'm just a terrible human being. I'm honestly not sure anymore. It's okay, I'm a terrible human being too. So it works wonders for everybody. Solutions are rather straightforward, even if it's not always easy to figure out in the first place. Granted, most are easy. Game has multiple endings, 5 or 6, I believe. Also, the narrative and how people treat you is different based on how you've spoken to them before, which can drastically alter things later in the game. Pretty fun game, one that you'll spend a lot of time in thanks to the amount of endings there are. To get all the endings, you have to play it at least 2 full times at the bare minimum. A bit about the characters in general, I'll point out, for those of you who maybe somehow don't know this, San Francisco is effectively real-life USA's gay capital, and has been, shit, forever maybe. The game doesn't change that fact, and I honestly don't think any character I met or heard about wasn't bi, or much more prominently, gay. Everyone mentions or has their sexual orientation mentioned, so it's kinda rubbed in your face, but not going as far as, for instance, here's the YMCA guys all oiled up, butt naked, and doing the Gangnam Style dance in your face. What the fuck, Dark Mika? It is blatantly gay, and it's really not being that tactful about it, but it's also not tastelessly done. The game is $20, totally worth it. The only people I can't suggest this to are people who want absolutely nothing to do with homosexuality. This isn't a dating sim, so you're not out to bed someone of your own sex, but it is brought up on a regular basis. If you can't handle that, or handle two big burly guys saying cutesy lovey-dovey things to each other, you really don't want this game. Everyone else, you probably do. It's cute, fun, has a good bit of social satire in both blatant and tongue-in-cheek ways. You can be a dick in the most hilarious of ways. It's just really fucking gold. If you're on the fence, try it. I don't think you'll leave the game unhappy with the purchase. And only a smidge of a disclaimer here. I'm a little bit biased, maybe, but just a little, as I'm absolutely flaming fucking gay. So all the gay talk was written by the resident gay person on SML, I guess. So yeah, it was an awesome game when I checked it out on PlayStation. It was actually at MAGFest, not this past MAGFest, but last year's show. That's where I met them and said hi to them and got it on the show. And maybe eventually we'll have a couple of copies to give away as well. Hint, hint.
Hi.
Pay attention. But yeah, really good stuff. I enjoyed the game. Good to hear that Dark Mika enjoyed it as well. And she seems like a perfect audience for it, given the whole sexuality thing, huh? Jordan in chat, it's true. Everyone in the game is gay. Oh, man. Anyway, next game to talk about is called RC Club AR Motorsports, released by AB Light Studios July 4th on iOS and Android as a free-to-play game with microtransactions included. RC Club is a realistic simulation of a radio-controlled car performing as it would in the real world. Gravity, speed, acceleration, weight, friction, forces, lights, shadows. RC Club is an intuitive simulator accessible to all. Drive inside a supermarket or in the street. Every circuit can be possible. Our friend Jacob Garner covered this one, and Cole, you're going to read his email.
I am. We're gender swapping on the email reads today.
It's okay. We're Jacob's so- kind of a woman anyway, so...
Nice.
So what does Jacob have to say about this game?
Jacob says, RC Club Augmented Reality Motorsports is an augmented reality driving game. Boy, I'm glad he cleared that up for us. Released by Abbey Light Studios for Android and iOS. With this game, you let the game scan the area around you and you get to control an RC car. There are various cards to buy, as well as a couple of add-on packs that have stuff like ramps and things that will change the physics of the game. The base game is free, giving you a card to play with, as well as a preview of the stunt and quantum packs for the ramp and an accelerator, respectively, to use with the car. As a base game, it comes off as little more than an AR gimmick. The one car and the preview accessories aren't really enough to whet the appetite, and after 5 minutes, I was ready to delete the game off my phone. However, the accessory packs are $1 each, and if you're willing to spend the money on them, the stunt pack is at least worth your time. Please note, we were given the stunt pack for review, so I don't know how the quantum pack is. The pack includes 5 more items with different kinds of ramps and loops for your car to go through. I had some difficulty aiming the car to get on the ramps, but there's a learning curve with it. The game wants to be pick up and play, but the controls aren't the easiest. At the same time, this isn't a serious racing game. It's an AR sandbox for you to play with a toy car in. It's amusing for a few minutes at a time, but I never found it to be more than that. I had a hard time setting up anything intricate that I could also drive my car through, and while the simple stuff is fun, the realistic camera angle doesn't make it easy to navigate. I will say that the augmented reality part of the game is neat if you have a big enough area for the car to drive in. If you don't have a big empty area available, you'll want to head outside to play this. Of course, one would ask that if you're doing this outside, why aren't you playing with a real RC car? But I digress.
Because it's winter, Jacob, you dick.
The graphics for the cars are impressive, and I liked how the cars actually cast a shadow as you drive them around. RC Club is a difficult game to review. The graphics and physics are solid, but the controls aren't the best and never feel intuitive to use, at least on a phone. I'd recommend downloading it and giving it a shot if it seems like it's something that's up your alley. This is easily a game that one could blow hours on. It has a few neat ideas, and it would be interesting to see what comes from this in the future.
Yeah, I enjoyed the game. I dicked around with a bit on my phone. I ended up picking up the stunt pack and just having fun having my car race around. It was tough to line everything up. Just not having that physical object kind of throws you off a bit. But as a free download, you know, why not just download it, check it out? You might have a blast with it. And if you do, drop a buck or two on the stunt pack or the quantum pack or some vehicles you could pick up. And I'm sure they're going to support it with more content in the future as well. But because it's Jacob, he always has to include another review. So what kind of bonus review did he include this time?
Jacob has thrown in a review for Giant Boulder of Death.
Interesting. I want to hear more.
Let's go. Giant Boulder of Death is a freemium game from Adult Swim Games and Pikpok for iOS and Android. I don't know how to describe this because I wouldn't exactly call it a bowling game, yet it doesn't feel like a runner either. Anyway, the story goes that you're a big boulder whose girlfriend, also a boulder, gets turned into a statue by some asshole monarch. How do I keep going after that? Fucking assholes. Naturally, this enrages you and you become a giant boulder of death. You roll down the mountains and run over everything that you possibly can in your path, avoiding spiked walls and gaping holes bigger than Joe's anus. Ouch.
Hey,
The controls are simple. You tilt your phone to go left or right, and you tap on the screen to make your boulder do small jumps. The game gives you goals to complete each game, and doing so unlocks more stuff for you to run over and score more points. There are upgrades that you can buy which will unlock different versions of the same game, and while not necessary, look like they're a ton of fun. Doing stuff like watching short video clips will give you gems, which can also unlock certain areas. Certain areas of the game, or can be used for continues after you've died. Game begins and ends fairly quickly, and it is perfect for commutes or just needing to kill 5 minutes. Giant Boulder of Death is another great game under the Adult Swim Games banner, and I definitely recommend that you check it out.
I will have to check that one out because it looks absolutely insane. And hey, if there's an asshole monarch in there, I can't even... Jesus.
The language difficulty is contagious today.
It's one of those nights. Heart. Hopefully I don't do too bad on the interview that comes up after this, because I'm having such a hard time with my words today. It would be a shame if that carried over into the interview that is very clearly going to happen in about 10 minutes. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Link A Pix Color, developed and published by Lightwood Games. It released January 18th on the 3DS for $7.99. Link A Pix is a clue-linking puzzle where every grid has a picture hidden inside. The aim is to reveal the picture by painting paths to link the clues. Connect pairs of clues which have the same color and number. The number shows the length of the line which will connect them. Link A Pix can always be solved using logic and deduction. You don't ever have to guess. We covered a similar game a while back called Pixel Lines DX on the Switch. Basically, you're given a big grid with different colored numbers sprinkled around on the grid. And the numbers correlate to how many lines, how many squares there are to connect in a line. So if there's twos right next to each other, those just connect directly because they're twos. If there's a three, a space, and a three, that's three blocks right there, so you connect those. Lower numbers are easier. You know, threes are around corners. Fours are usually like straight lines or a square shape. Later in the game, you'll get things like 15s and 16s that require a lot of solving other numbers before getting to the big ones. I really enjoyed the game on the Switch when we covered it. This is on the 3DS from a different developer, and the gameplay is pretty much the same. I think I enjoyed this version a little more than Pixel Lines, based on the controls. With this one, you know, you could do all the drawing on the touchscreen of the 3DS with the stylus, and then moving around the grid is done with the circle pad on the 3DS, which works perfectly. It was an absolute pleasure to play. I didn't have any kind of control issues with it. The only extent of issue I might have had was every now and then it would be a pain to kind of backtrack a line. I wish there was a way to just tap somewhere else and erase the one line, but you could do that, I believe, with the B button, just erases whatever line you're working on. But, you know, otherwise the gameplay is what you would expect out of something like this, and it's fun. It works well. There's 120 puzzles in the game, ranging everywhere from, I think the small ones are like 10 by 15 grid. The bigger ones are like 30 by 40 something. They get massive, massive, massive. Some of the smaller ones I could solve in like 2-3 minutes. I've been working on a bigger one. I think I've been going for like a half hour and I haven't completed it yet. Because they get big and complex and it takes a lot of work to figure them out. But if you've ever played a game like this, I know they had puzzles like this in the Puzzler series on 3DS. I mentioned Pixel Lines, which is on the Switch. This one on the 3DS, if you have a 3DS and you enjoy these kind of puzzle games, there's no reason to not own this. It's $8 with 120 puzzles. It's a no-brainer, especially if you're into these kinds of games. If you've never played a game like this before, definitely do a little bit of research on it, because a puzzle game like this isn't for everyone, but they're incredibly addictive. They're easy to pick up. The smaller puzzles are very easy to get the hang of and learn the mechanics of. Bigger puzzles will rack your brain. They take a lot of time, a lot of patience, a lot of sometimes trial and error to figure out, did this line work right or no? I'm going to have to go back and change. Oh God, I have an entire section. I have to delete everything and start over. Shit like that. But again, $8. If you're into these games, this is a necessary purchase, I think. I'm going to waste the entire rest of my night trying to complete the one puzzle I've already spent a half hour on.
Awesome.
So yeah, $8, buy this one. Good, good stuff. Fun thing, right before we take care of our last game, I just got another email about Boomball. Isn't that funny?
Did we have an extra code?
Yes, we do. Actually, let me check.
Wow.
Yes, we do. We have one last code to go with one last email. John Prudlow emails in and says, "Hey, Joe on the SML podcast. Played the first Boomball and loved it. One of the few who seriously misses gesture controls and seriously laments the death of Kinect 2.0 production and support. I could win Boom Ball 3, it would help cushion the blow of continued bad news on the Kinect front. Thanks for your consideration. John, you got our last code. So shout out again to Aroto and Eric, and now John as well. You got our three codes for Boom Ball 3. Isn't that fun? We had three for three.
Yay.
Yay. But we do have one final game to talk about, and that is called Vesta, developed and published by Final Boss Games. Released January 19th on Xbox One, Switch, Steam, and PS4 for $14.99. Join Vesta as she explores various environments over 36 levels full of obstacles and enemy robots. She'll need her brains and droids' power to traverse this varied landscape, properly manage the little energy left in the complex, solve the numerous puzzles she finds in her path, and even fight to survive. But most of all, she will need to discover the truth of this story. Oh, Cole, what is this story that we need to discover the truth of?
The story is that Vesta is the last remaining human in this complex that has been run by robots. She was supposed to awaken 204 years before the events in the game. She's a late bloomer.
God.
The character of Vesta is actually a small girl. She, I don't know, I'd have to guess she's probably between 7 and 9, I'd say. She's adorably spunky with bright red hair that's in pigtails, and she's got a bad attitude, and I just adored the character of Vesta. She's not alone on her adventures in this robot hell, in that she is paired up with a very large droid who is sort of a bodyguard and sometimes a paperweight for Vesta. The goal is, with each level, it is designed out like a puzzle. And you have to manipulate the energy that is available to get from one end of it to the other and to ascend to the next level. So the way that she does this is that she has kind of like a little vacuum pack. And there are drums scattered throughout the world. And if it has energy in it, it will kind of glow like a fluorescent green kind of color. And then you can then walk up to it, press A, and she will suck up the energy into her pack. And then she can go to an empty one, press A, and she will expel the energy into that one instead.
So you said drums, and for a second I was expecting there to be like drum kits through the stage. It's like,
no, it's more like a barrel type drum. Is
drop
that
a beat on this
drum?
Motherfucking barrel.
That might be more of a redneck term to refer to it as a drum. I wasn't even aware of that. But
do you call it a drum because barrel sounds funny with a southern accent?
Does it sound funny when I say, I never even thought of it sounding, does it?
I don't say it.
Barrel. Now that you said it, I'm like, fuck, I do say that one weird. Like, I know I say ass weird, but I didn't realize I said barrel. Or fly. Got me all fly the other day.
We're peripheral.
Peripheral? I can't say it. I can't.
Anyway, Vesta.
I can say anti-disestablishmentarianism.
Oh, that one works. Because we use that in the show all the time.
So useful.
Anyway, Vesta. Back to Vesta.
Yes. Anyway, she puts the energy in the drums, and it will power up different doorways or different with platforms that will move around the levels to help get her where she needs to go. There are some areas that Vesta can go that the droid cannot, and vice versa. So you have to move them both about the level, sometimes together, sometimes separately, in order to get them both to the end. There are monsters. I say monsters. They're bad robots, basically, that Vesta will encounter. On her own, she has no means for dealing with these robots. She just has to avoid them. But if she has droid with her, he can shoot rockets 4 at a time before he has to reload. And he can, once he shoots them with a rocket, it stuns them, and then Vesta can come back and draw their energy from them. But this is timed. They will only stay knocked out for a certain amount of time. Each one will have like a little meter above them when they're knocked out. And if that meter drops to 0, they come back to life and she doesn't get to suck the energy out of them. But you will need to use the droid's ability to knock out the enemies in order to have enough energy to get through most of these levels. Once you do manage to traverse everything in order to actually finish a level for most of them, you will need to have droid stand on a certain platform while Vesta stands on another and has three tubes of energy in her pack so that she can carry on. So basically, you've got to find a way to use the least amount of energy possible throughout the level and still get to the end of it. So this means you have to do a lot of, okay, I got from A to B, but now I have to go back to A to get the energy to move on to C. Or otherwise you won't have enough. It really is a creative level design that I was really impressed that I didn't feel like I was repeating the same kind of puzzle mechanics over and over, even though it's a lot of just moving the energy around. It didn't become monotonous in any way. I did have a problem, though, with the boss battles at the end. The game is broke down into three chapters, and at the end of each chapter is a boss. Considering that you cannot control Vesta and droids at the same time, you have to control them separately. So you press X to switch between them, and neither one of them can jump. But Vesta cannot shoot or run or anything like that. And droid cannot run or jump or anything, but he can't shoot. You have to really time how you're going to take on some of these boss battles. And it's kind of problematic for me to have a boss that can outrun you and, you know, avoid obstacles and stuff that you can't.
Oh, God. Like,
it felt a little unfair. And it took 7 or 8 tries before I even figured out, like, what kind of pattern to pick up to even attempt to attack the boss, let alone take it out. And so it took a good dozen tries before I finally beat it, just because there wasn't really any kind of instruction as to do this. And it was weird because in the very beginning of the game, it was very tutorial heavy, like, okay, do this now, do that now. And you're like, okay, I got it, leave me alone. And then you get to the boss and you're just sitting there going, the fuck do I do? There was nothing. But it's really, you know, other than those damn bosses just being like, what? The rest of the game is just really well thought out. The level design is incredibly well done. The game does use an isometric view, and you cannot control the camera beyond, like, panning. In some instances, you can pan a little and kind of see what's coming up ahead of you.
Yeah.
It's not problematic for most of the game. It does kind of affect trying to line up shots with droids sometimes. But it's what's a bigger problem is that there are some parts where some levels have, like, objects in the foreground. And they're important for, you know, like, atmosphere and everything. And it adds to the appearance of the game. But it can be kind of problematic if you're trying to get to a platform. Yeah. And there's, like, something blurry in your field of view and you can't even see if you're near the platform. That did happen a couple of small times. And I was just like, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world, but I lost my train of thought. I had something else I wanted to mention. That shit's contagious. See,
it's not so easy. This shit happens tonight. And I'm sure I edited most of mine out because I'm self-conscious.
And you're going to leave mine sit.
Oh, goddamn right I am.
Everybody's going to laugh at me.
I got to look good on this show. I got to hide my own mistakes. Plus, I'm not really giving you a good opportunity to dance around it and correct. So, fuck it. No. Keep going.
Oh, shit.
So, $15 on this one. What do you think?
For the price, I definitely give it a buy it. I just really liked the art style and everything. The levels were creative and well done. Vesta's an interesting character. I really got kind of attached to her. I like that the cutscenes for the game are actually designed like comics.
Ooh.
So it has a very comic book feel for the little cutscenes, and it was just really well done. It was incredible art. I was pretty happy. I do remember what I was going to throw out now. I had a really odd glitch, and Vesta can only take one hit and she's gone. I mean, she's a little girl, so it makes sense. But I was jumping off of a platform and I thought I had let it get far enough down, and I did not. And I walked off of the edge of it anyway because I'm impatient as fuck, and it made the ah sound like I died. And Vesta fell flat on the ground, and like I died, and yet I was still just able to like scoot her dead body around the level and finish it, even though she was dead.
Nice.
And it looked so bad, but it was so funny, and I couldn't record it because embargoes are things.
Aww.
But my daughter was just sitting there watching me, like mortified, looking over at me, and I'm like, she's dead.
I mean, technically, I think you could have recorded it, just not uploaded it.
Yeah, and then it, like, she was, it, when it cut to the cutscene where the bot was talking to her, she was just like, dead.
I really wish I could have seen this now.
Like, oh my god, I broke the game.
Well, that is what you do on this show. You break everything.
I did. I was so sad that I couldn't record that because it was so good and so not good at the same time. Yeah. Otherwise, buy the game, and if you break it, at least the embargo's up. You can record it now.
Oh, man. Good stuff. But that is all the games we have to talk about tonight. Everyone, stick around. We're going to take a quick little musical interlude, and I will be back with Rick Lagnese of Warhorse Studios chatting about Kingdom Come Deliverance. I'm super excited about this interview. I think this is going to be a pretty big game, and to get someone from that game and that studio, Deep Silver published title, on this show, I don't know why they did it. I don't know why. We don't deserve it. But yep, that is it for now. Cole, should I even bother asking you if you have final words?
No.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. I am joined right now by Rick Lagnese of Warhorse Studios. Rick, how are you doing today?
Very good. Thanks for having me on, man. I'm pumped. We're less than a month away from release.
Yes, you are. And the game that you were mentioning, getting close to release, Kingdom Come Deliverance. I've been excited about this one for a while. But for any of our listeners who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch. What is Kingdom Come Deliverance?
Yeah, absolutely. So Kingdom Come Deliverance is an open world, first person, very story driven RPG that's set in medieval Bohemia in 1403. So we base the game off of actual history, and we make the game very as realistic as possible, where we actually put you into that actual setting. And you play as a son of a blacksmith, and you play as Henry, and you're on a quest for vengeance as King Sigismund of Hungary has invaded your homeland, Bohemia, which is modern-day Czech Republic. And he basically burns your hometown, Silver Scalas, to the ground, murders almost everyone you know, including your parents, who were murdered right in front of you.
So it's a family-friendly game.
Absolutely. Peggy 0, no. Peggy 18, actually, just for those who are wondering. But yeah, so we're excited, and, you know, we know that it's a challenge. When our slogan for our Kickstarter was Dungeons and No Dragons. So do not expect magic or dragons in the game, but expect a pretty killer game that's going to throw you into an intense story where you're going to have to make a lot of choices that will have effects on the game, and you as a person, you'll be tested. It'll be very interesting.
So no magic, no dragons for a fantasy game. It doesn't seem very fantastical yet. What is there for the fantasy heads out there?
Well, that's just it. It's, and to be very even clear, there's no fantasy whatsoever in this game. So, I mean, like I said before, history will repeat itself in Kingdom Come Deliverance. The biggest thing with our game, if you're into a game where you actually will role play and where you need to make decisions, and if you really have an appreciation for HEMA, which is historical European martial arts combat, or heck, even if you just like, you know, a game that has the, you know, the what you level up is what you use, like Skyrim. The story content are very story-driven game, like the Mafia 1 and Mafia 2 games. Realistic combat like Operation Flashpoint. Then you're going to love our game because our game is a game that you'll be able to put in. The average gamer will put in about, 50 hours into our game. If you're very thorough, you could put in 100, and some will put in more.
So I should block off a week off work, huh?
I'd probably push for two.
Well, the show's going on hiatus for 2 weeks in February, I guess.
So, go for it, man.
Yeah, the game looks fantastic. I've had my eye on it for a while. I never really knew that it was going to be more grounded in reality than in fantasy, but that actually makes me more excited for the game, because every fantasy RPG out there is like magic and spells and flying monsters, and it's good to hear that this is something just grounded in real life and in history.
Well, how about I throw out another wild card to you?
Let's hear it.
It's not a fighting game.
No, but
when I say that, let me tell you something. So if we're basing on history, right? If we're trying to base it on realism, are you still there, by the way?
Yeah.
My computer's doing funny things at night. Perfect timing.
Just smash it.
So, yeah, let's smash it.
Fucking things.
With a short sword. the wild card, like I told you about not being a fighting game. Well, you know, back then or at any time in history or even now, you don't want war to happen. But in Kingdom Come Deliverance, war will happen. It's just a matter of events that lead up to that. And the combat in the game, though, is so intense that when you get to those points, you're like, holy crap, what the hell is... Dude, it really is awesome because there's so much going on. It's actually like medieval combat when you get into it. And the great part of it is, though, it's not a fighting game because, you know, there's not going to be, you know, something around every single corner. But you could actually fight your way through most of the game if you wanted to. So we're going to leave that up to you. We just don't present it as heavy action. How about Mountain Blade, for example? Mountain Blade is an amazing, they're amazing, that studio. They're an amazing game. But we complement each other, if you will. And so we were kind of like our own game. I mean, I know developers always say, hey, we're doing something new and unique, and that's cool. But we really are doing something that's different. And you know what? Let me put it this way. In 2014, we were the third most successful Kickstarter out of any Kickstarter that year.
Oh, wow. And
our goal was 300,000 euros. We did over 1,100,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah, so you know what? It's not just like we're trying to just make a great sales pitch. It's that we have fans that have backed us up, that they believe in this, and we're going through this to the end because we have, 28 days left, I think.
That's getting close. It's down to the wire.
February 13th.
And it feels so far away still.
I know.
Are you guys getting excited at the studio? Everyone kind of getting on edge of like, oh my God, this is happening. This is going down.
I mean, we're excited and nervous at the same time because we're a new studio. And I'm not going to lie, man. Dude, we obviously want this game to sell like hotcakes, you know? And we believe that it will. We believe that it is going to sell well. But at the same time, if we're being brutally honest, you get nervous because you're like, man, this is our first game. There's no magic. There's no dragons. And you get hit with that time and time again. Like, you know, you play as Henry. Yeah, you can customize, you know, your character with like your clothes and kind of what you wear. But like, there's a lot of things that go against the modern the grain of things where it's different. But that's what we think is going to be something very special too. We're really focusing on making this a video game and fun. It's not just a medieval simulator. You're going to have a lot of fun, but it's not going to be your average game because there's no magic, no dragons.
So this is not Skyrim 2.
No, you will see Skyrim-esque elements in the game. What you use is what you level up in. It has the sometimes you're walking in the villages and you're like, man, there's a little bit of hints of Skyrim in there because Skyrim is amazing. And, you know, we take inspiration from a lot of different games, even Red Dead Redemption on horseback, and you're on horseback trotting along and talking to people while you're on your mission. It's cool.
That's really awesome. I miss Red Dead. That was such a fun game too.
Absolutely.
Oh man. Go ahead. What were you saying?
Sorry, I just said, can't wait for the next Red Dead.
Yeah, if it shows up, do you think it's going to happen this year?
Yes. I think the rumors were, what was it, May or something?
Something like that.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I believe it's coming out this year, absolutely.
I hope so. I really enjoyed the first one. I never got too much into the GTA games, but Red Dead just clicked with me.
Special game.
It is, very much so. Back to Kingdom Come, with the whole being grounded in reality, with the combat, is this going to be something reminiscent of like Bushido Blade where one hit could kill someone if you're lucky?
Dude, it's so funny you say that because wasn't that for the PS1?
Yeah.
I love when people kind of bring that up a little bit because let me tell you something. And what's really pretty sweet is, yes, I have long answers for what I could probably say in a sentence.
Bring them on.
You have to forgive my, I don't know, my excitement and like childlike passion. So, okay, yes, the answer is yes. In fact, we even have quote unquote boss battles in the game. Like, you know, guys that are really important that you need to take down, okay?
Yeah.
And start the story, and there's might be some cutscenes, whatever, that lead up to it. But like with a quote unquote boss battle, you might have a guy that's like super good at fighting. He might be strong, you know, he might be able to kill you in a couple hits or whatever. But when I say in a couple hits, it's the same goes for him. Because if he's not wearing a helmet and I take a sword and I whack him on the head, the dude is dead in one, if not two hits. And, you know, I'll tell you why. We use a physical collision system. So what we do is we calculate, we use by the damage by what weapon you use, what they're wearing, and how hard you actually hit them. So if what could be, so basically what I'm trying to say is swords actually hit each other. Your sword will hit the shield. You don't go through anything. So if I hit someone in the head and I barely hit them, I'm definitely going to do a ton of damage. But the biggest damage you can do, the impact is, again, so, well, let's say if someone has heavy armor, right? They have, there's 14 different slots for armor in our game because you're going to have layers of what you wear because, again, it's based on historical European martial arts. So if someone has full plate armor and has thick armor, you're going to want to use a mace. Or, heck, you're going to want to use a warhammer, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to calculate how much damage you do based on how hard you hit them and where. So you want to look for the weak areas. If someone is holding their sword high, swing and uppercut them. Swing low. If someone's got a shield, they're holding it to the right side. You got to hit them on their left side or would want to hit them on their left side. Follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. Would you say that the combat feels somewhat similar to a game like For Honor that has a very strategic feel to it?
Yes. It's going to have, you'll be reminded a little bit of For Honor, but it's still very, I'll go even a little more in depth. So we have, a star, if you will, that kind of you can lock onto an enemy, and it doesn't mean you lock onto them like you're automatically going to hit them. It just means that you can lock on, so you can swing in a certain direction to try and hit them. So if I swing up high, it doesn't mean I'm going to hit them in the head. It just means that's where I'm going to swing, and you can stab. So that's, there's six different ways to attack directions. And where was I going with this? So what I was going to say is because I get so excited, I have to like, Rick, calm down, relax, we're good. So what's really wild is you can injure different body parts as well. So if I swing and I hit you in the hand, it's going to make it hard to even swing your sword. If you have both hands damaged, you might not even be able to use it. I actually had two arrows in both, like one arrow in both hands. I couldn't even use my sword or bow when I was trying to show someone this presentation. It was hilarious.
In so, the hands.
Yeah.
Damn.
Not just an arrow to the knee, to the hand, bro.
Suck it, Skyrim.
If you get an arrow and it gets shot, right, it goes right in your foot, you're probably not going to be able to run. So it's going to really slow you down. So we even have visors for our helmets. So some of the helmets you have, you can remove, open and close your visor. And you know, if you open it up, yeah, it's not going to have your vision won't be impaired, but you're going to be more open for those arrows that can sneak right in there. So that's where the physical collision comes in. You got to pay attention.
Nice. I like how in-depth it is. I'm kind of curious. You mentioned taking an arrow to the foot. Can you be pinned in place if an arrow hits you and the ground the right way?
Well, probably not. You're not going to be pinned in its place. I mean, you know what's interesting is all the coding that goes into this. For the big scale game we have, you know, you would think, you know, you'd have like, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. I don't know. You know, I'm not like some expert here on which studio has this many people in that. But our studio is just 110 people that's making a massive game like this. And either way, the coding to do all this is very intricate. So we figured, hey, at the very least, we're gonna slow you down. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So and then again, that also depends on like impact of hit. But even with a sword, or mace, or bow, or I mean, spear, pole arms.
So I'm guessing there's a pretty decent weapon variety in the game.
Yeah. So again, well, we have a lot of different types of swords. We have different types of axes, maces, pole arms. The halberd is one thing that we actually put back into the game. We weren't sure if it was going to work out or not. The fans really wanted it, so we brought that back into the game. As I was saying before, warhammers, and different types of bows, different types of arrows. So there's a lot of different types of weapons, and it's going to be important, again, with honing your craft, because you know, you can try out different weapons in the game, but just remember what you use is what you're going to level up in. And then you want to unlock perks as well. So you want, you know, again, like Skyrim, you get bonuses if you level up your weapon enough. And then there's certain perks you can unlock. So it's going to be really exciting, man, because you really want to pay attention when you're in combat. And I'm being a little redundant here, but you're going to have to take things into consideration. And another thing, bro, when you're in combat, we're not going to allow you to change your armor. We're not going to say, time out, guys, time out. I need to take my helmet and put it on. I forgot to put it on, guys. No, we're not going to allow it to happen.
Better hope you can open up the menu and get that helmet on before the dude hits you in the fucking face, huh?
Well, I'll tell you what, there's an indicator. There's two swords that are like, yeah, in the shape of an X. So when you see that at the top of your screen, it means you're in the combat zone. So in order to switch your armor, you're going to have to leave the combat zone. Just like even healing yourself, you're going to have to leave the combat zone. We're not going to allow you just to bandage yourself while you're in combat. So
how is the healing done in this game? Obviously, there's no magic, so no healing spells. You mentioned bandages. Is it based on like a hit point gauge, or how is it done?
Well, you can bleed out, so you want to help with bandages if you're bleeding, of course. Now, also, you'll heal up by there's alchemy in the game, so there's your some crafting there for you, and it's a really fun mini game. We use a base of like oil or you know, alcohol, water, whatever, and then you actually have to cook it. There's an hourglass, and you have to read books on how to use alchemy, and it's actual, like, you know, herbs and, you know, flowers and things like that. And also, you know, eating will slowly heal you over time, also based on the food you eat. And sleeping will also be able to heal you as well. And it depends on where you're sleeping. If you're sleeping in a bed, you'll heal quicker than sleeping on the ground, like at a camp.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are ways to heal, but again, you won't be able to heal in combat. You won't be able to, like, I mean, I don't mind it in games, right? I don't mind, like, if I'm playing Zelda that I can drink some kind of a potion or whatever to heal myself. But when you're in combat in this game, hell no.
So, I like that.
It's going to be fun, bro. It's going
to
be fun.
You can't just pause a battle and eat like 40 potatoes to get your health back.
No, and again, it is a video game. So there's times where, you know, that you're going to cheat here or there. Like, for example, we do the classic Epona, hey, you know, blow your whistle or whatever, or whistle whatever, and then the horse will come. But, you know, we're trying to really give you a good feel for what it was like back then in 1403.
So why 1403?
Well, I'll tell you. So first off, we are the first company, the first studio to ever make a game on Czech history. And one reason for that is our studio, I'm the only guy that's in the U.S., only guy or gal. So being that I'm the U.S. community manager /PR. But everybody else is of course, they're in Prague, which is the capital of the Czech Republic. So Dan Varvara, the creative director, who was also the creative director behind Mafia 1 and Mafia 2, which is why I alluded to that earlier.
Nice pedigree there.
Yeah. You know, all good ideas in Czech Republic start at a pub. That's what I hear. So, yeah, Dan Varvara and Martin Klima got together. Martin Klima has great experience, by the way, with in the video game industry. He even wrote the script for the RPG game Dragon's Lair. And those guys wanted to make a game based on their history. And there's a lot going on because in 1403, and there was a lot of religious warfares. But we're going to focus on the civil war that was going on between two brothers, or half-brothers, I should say. And like I was saying, it was King Sigismund of Hungary who invaded Bohemia and literally abducted his own half-brother, King Wenceslas IV. And he brought over mercenaries who are called the Cumans. Now, the Cumans, they used to live in Asia, but they were forced out by the Mongolians. So then they've lived in Hungary for the past 100 years, so they've learned the language and whatnot. And they're trained, and they know how to fight. So he's using them to take over Bohemia. And it's a fascinating history. There are books on this. And, you know, be careful, though, because if you want to start reading, you can actually spoil some of the events in the game. So,
wow.
Ironically enough.
So it's that accurate to what happened in history?
Yes. I mean, in fact, you know, that some of the bigger scale battles actually, you know, did happen. Some of the, you know, characters in the game are actually non-fictional characters. So.
That is really cool. You don't see that often in games these days, of actual historical figures in games.
Correct. And not only that, are you familiar with Brian Blessed, sir?
Brian Blessed. Off the top of my head, I can't recall.
No, it's fair enough, because we have some professional voice actors in our game as well as actors. And Brian Blessed is a famous European actor, especially in the UK. And he's very, he's hilarious. He's very witty. He's loud, but he's loud in a way that just makes you laugh. And he's doing a voiceover for a German military engineer, Conrad Kaiser, who helps you build a trebuchet. And Tom McKay stars as Henry. So if you guys look that up on like the IMDb or somewhere else, you'll see that even the voiceovers. There's a lot going into the story. I mean, there's over 4 hours of cutscenes in the game.
Wow.
And some of them are only, see, here's the thing too. You're not going to be able to see all the cutscenes. It's not possible because it's going to be based on the choices you make in the game.
That's really neat.
Dude, you'll be like, Rick, man, I had this awesome skirmish and it was like 10 on 10 and man, the bastard, that gang member that's causing all this trouble, I beat the snot out of him and whatever. And I'm like, dude, I actually never had that happen because I was able to talk him out of it because I leveled up my speech skill enough to convince him.
So this is like true role playing where pretty much nobody's game is going to be the same.
No, and this is what's really ironic is that, yes, there is only one ending, but it really is up to you how you get there. And everyone's going to have a different story to tell. I mean, you can be a master at this game and even a master at combat, and that dang farmer that you tried to screw on with in the beginning that killed you because he got you one hit to the head and your fighting skills sucked in the beginning, he can still kill you at the end of the game. Because if you don't have a helmet on and he takes a blow to your head with a sword, you're donezo.
Damn. That's really neat.
Yes, sir.
Oh, man. So you mentioned the game, the Kickstarter was back in, what, 2014, you said?
Yes, sir.
When did development start, or was it already underway?
Well, in one sense, it was underway, but it was more of a prototype that we had presented to an investor. And what's interesting is we went to almost every investor you can imagine, and no one thought that we could do it, that we can make a game without magic or without dragons. And really, the development started with the success of the Kickstarter. So, yeah, we had a prototype, whatever. But it really, the big meat of the work started then.
Gotcha. How did you guys get mixed up with Deep Silver then?
Yeah, so Deep Silver happened, oh boy, what was it? I'm trying to remember the exact time, but you know, it was 2000, it was 2016, towards the end of 2016, I believe. And yeah, it definitely was somewhere around there. And, you know, Deep Silver is great because they are helping us obviously publish the game, and you know, we're able still to stick true to what we always wanted to do, and they're publishing it. It's just fantastic because we're able to stick to the integrity of the game. They've worked really well with us. So because we were like, hey, you know, here's our game, they obviously knew about it by then because they weren't our publisher right after the Kickstarter. It happened in 2016. They liked our game, they liked the integrity of the game. They like that we're able to, you know, we love that we're able to keep it as the way it is. So it's a perfect relationship.
Nice. And they're pretty much just letting you guys do what you need to do and keeping hands off.
I mean, basically, I mean, we're keeping the game true to the way we've wanted it to. And so, you know, yeah. And because of that, it just makes the relationship work so well together.
Nice. And that's the way you want it to be. It's never good when a publisher steps in. They're like, no, we're going to change this. We're going to change this. We're going to do this.
Deep Silver is just, it's been great. I mean, I tell you, we've been able to stick to what we've wanted to make since the very beginning.
That is very, very good to hear. Going back to the Kickstarter, I always feel bad when I have developers on and they talk about a Kickstarter, because then I'm reminded I didn't know about the Kickstarter at the time and I couldn't back it. Kind of curious, what kind of goofy, crazy rewards did you guys offer in the Kickstarter?
Well, yeah, so that's what's also interesting too, because I started working with the company in, let's see, it was May of 2016, I believe. And when I really started working for them, the Kickstarter, you know, we had released a beta earlier in March, and that was when I was actually kind of like went on a tour with these guys. And so what I'm trying to say is we started changing. So there was a bunch of different tiers, and we had like different like collector's editions, and you could, you know, the beta. As far as anything crazy, I'll be straight up honest with you, I can't recall. But the thing is we stopped doing the collect, like our actual own collector's edition at the end of 2016. And that's where you have like, you can listen to all the music that we made in the game, like the book stuff on history, like just some amazing content that, you know, that unfortunately, you know, we sold out of. And, you know, now then you had the limited collector's edition that Deep Silver had. And now there's a lot of that. So, but getting back to the Kickstarter, you know, I guess what I'm saying is I wasn't like knew exactly every little detail about the Kickstarter, because we had, at that point we had moved on and we had learned, you know, we had so much going forward. And, so that's my long answer for that one.
I got to say, I'm sad. I've seen pictures of the Deep Silver Collector Edition. I'm very bummed that it never had any kind of American release for it.
Yeah, you know, I'm just, when it comes to that, the community manager PR guy, but you know, I mean, I say that actually, I'm trying to be humble, but it doesn't sound like it's working. So no, let's put it this way. You know, the thing is if that ever does somehow happen last minute, I'll let you know, but I don't see that happening. And you know, I really don't have much else beyond that, because you know, when it came out on Amazon, it was great. We were really pushing it. We were even trying to, you know, promote that, and then that sold out quickly. But you know, bottom line is, I'll tell you what, if somehow someone doesn't collect their collector's edition and there's one available, I'll let you know.
Awesome. Because I've been eyeing up, EB Games in Australia still has the collector edition in stock, and I'm sitting here like fighting with myself. Do I really pay, you know, the 100 plus whatever shipping and importing fees there are?
I know.
Just to get this collector, that steelbook looks awesome, and I am a whore for steelbooks.
Yes, the steelbook is insane. Oh, and I also forgot to mention too. Wow, I can't believe I forgot to mention that in our limited collector's edition, if you got like the highest tier, dude, you're getting Henry's short sword, and that,
really?
That collector's edition was $150 because you're literally getting a sword that is forged by an actual blacksmith.
How the fuck do you get away with shipping those?
I don't know. I don't know, but I can't wait to get mine.
Just go to the post office with a sword and a bubble envelope. Like, hey, I got to get this sent out.
Oh, I know. You know what? There's a lot of interesting things that go down with shipping and rules and regulations, especially today. But, you know, at the same time, the fans, I can't believe I wasn't thinking of that initially when you said that. But I'm saying it now, so I redeem myself. Henry Short Sword, baby.
How big is it?
I really don't know the exact length of it, but it's when you say short, you know, short sword, sometimes people think of like a dagger or something. It's like, it's not a dagger. It's going to look like an actual sword. It's going to be awesome.
Good Lord. That is crazy.
Yeah. It's definitely not going to be the size of a dagger. It's going to be a sword, baby. And I, you know what, no matter how it looks, I know I'll be rubbing it in, but I'm definitely going to post a video up of Henry's short sword. And there you go. You can edit this out if you want, but I'll sell it to you for like $1 million.
Oh God. I had $1 million, I would definitely just import the one from Australia and then buy a sword separately.
No, I would never sell it. It's amazing. I can't wait to get it. I've been bugging them. Like, would you just sell it to me? Like, no, Rick, we need to sell it. We need to send them all out.
Yeah, definitely let me know if there's any sitting around, because if I would have known about this Kickstarter back in 2014, I would have definitely dropped $150 on that kind of collector edition. That is insane.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Plus, then if my cats start pissing me off, I'll just poke them a couple of times. Oh, yeah. So what kind of trade shows have you guys done showing off the game? I'm guessing you've done stuff like E3 and PAX.
Yeah, so, you know, we always, we've always usually been attending, you know, Gamescom. In fact, my first event with these guys was before I became the U.S. community manager. I volunteered to help out, and I went to GDC San Francisco. We, you know, again, E3, Gamescom. We went to the PlayStation Experience. We went to, and I just got back from again PAX South. So, but you know, this is it. That was the last event that we went to, and we're ready now.
Now it's smooth sailing to release.
Smooth sailing to release, baby.
Well, hopefully smooth, right?
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's the only option at this point.
Do you have any kind of fun or crazy stories from showing the game off at these events? Maybe, I don't know, something of someone tried playing it and they were just awful at the game.
Well, I actually had, you know, someone when they first played it, they said, "Wow, this really sucks." And they, yeah, no, it was just your first impression with the combat because they were getting the crap kicked out of them. And so after, you know, because usually our presentations are anywhere from a half an hour to an hour. In this case, I don't know, I think it was a half an hour, 45 minutes. And by the end of showing them how it works and showing how you can actually train and level up, things started to make sense. I mean, it's like if no one ever told you what the game Dark Souls is like, and you get thrown into nothing, they're like, screw you, F you, have a nice day, because that's what it feels like in Dark Souls, which I absolutely love. One of my favorite games of all time, Dark Souls 1, and actually 3. You know, initially when you're doing the combat, and what's great is we have a codex and tutorial for how to play, and you know, in the beginning of you know, the game, or at some point towards, you know, towards the beginning, you'll have to train, because you're Henry Somerville, a blacksmith that comes into, here I go off on a tangent again, but, you know, comes into the service of Lord Rassic, and in order to go under his service, because you want to find the sword that was taken from you, that was the last thing you and your father made, you need to become a soldier. But that was one story that was kind of crazy. Not crazy, but it was kind of really funny, because he just said, wow, this game sucks, and I really appreciated that he was honest. I don't like if someone tells me, oh, the game's the best, and then maybe they'll write an article about it and say it sucks, which we haven't had that happen. I'm just saying that, you know, it's I love the honest feedback. And another incident I had, what was another one? It was when I was playing. And again, I had an arrow through both of my hands, and I couldn't use my sword or bow. I was like, what the heck? It was great. It's almost a PR nightmare, because here we are, we're playing the game, and you know, yeah, there's cutscenes and sometimes even in between fight scenes and battles, but it's not necessarily like, it's not scripted. Like you could, like I said, you could be really good at your fighting, and you could be really leveled up pretty high up. And if an archer hits you, man, in the face, dude, it's a wrap. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I still love the fact that both of your hands were disabled while trying like, how do you come back from that in the game? Is there a way to heal appendages? Can you be dismembered in the game?
So there's a way to heal, and again, you'd have to leave the fight scene. You know, have to leave the scene of combat in order to heal or to bandage you up. But we are staying away from the excessive gore, and also at the same time, if you think about it, movies always, you know, exaggerate. You know what I mean? Even if you're watching as much as Braveheart is actually probably my favorite movie of all time, they always make it look easy to dismember. And well, and truth be told, though, they were Scots, right? So, you know, at the time, they didn't have all this full plate armor on, what have you. But what I'm trying to say is, if you have full plate armor on, okay, you're not going to be able to just cut someone's arm off or their head off.
Yeah.
And but even still, we just stayed, you know, kind of stayed a little bit away from the excessive gore. So.
Got it. So if someone takes an axe to your head, it's not going to stick in your head.
It's not going to stick in your head, and it's not going to cut their head off. But believe me, it'll probably kill them. If they have a helmet on, well, you know, it's going to take a more than a hit or two. But again, it also depends on how hard you hit them. But yeah, and we're not going to have the excessive gore dismembering.
That's I'm kind of bummed. I like seeing that in some games, if it's appropriate, of course.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But, there you have it, my man.
I'm just waiting for one day a game comes out that you know, you could hit a guy in the head with an axe and it just sticks there and you could let go of it and it's just in his head.
Well, arrows will. If an arrow gets stuck, it gets shot at you in the head, it's going to stick in your head.
Yeah, that could be fun too.
You know what I mean?
So when you're in a battle and you have no use of your hands, can you just retreat? Will the enemies follow you? Will they track you down? Is it easy to get away?
They will track you down, and no, it is not easy to get away because they can run like you. So you have to really get quite a ways away from the scene, and you'll know though because the sword indicator, like the swords, the symbol, the icon up top of your screen that's in the shape of an X, it'll leave once once you're able to heal yourself. So, you know, again, we have certain, you know, parameters and coding that goes into that to try and, you know, again, make you feel like you really are in this really intense combat and that you can't, again, be like, time out, guys, time out, time out, you know? So.
And that is awesome. Oh, man, I cannot wait for this game. So I know you've said you've done a ton of interviews with this stuff. What questions are you not asked enough?
Huh.
Because I know, I'm sure I've asked a bunch of stuff that people have asked you countless times already. What do you want to talk about? What are people not asking you?
What I really like talking about is in the combat, you know, I like talking about the fun that you have with the combat. The thing is as much as we talk about realism, it is a video game, right?
Yeah.
So when you level up your, for example, you've been using your sword, now you can get perks for your sword. And what's great with these perks is like, there's a perk where you can draw blood easier with your sword. Or just be, your swordsmanship, or your fighting skill, when it gets up to a certain level, and then you can unlock the perk. And then we have another perk where if you draw blood, you get a strength bonus. So you start putting these perks together, man, and you're going to start to kick the crap out of people. So it's great when you can you draw blood and then you get a bonus, because when you draw blood, their health starts depleting, just like yours would.
Yeah.
And there's sometimes it's like, oh, freaking heck, man, now I'm bleeding out. And there's no way I can leave the combat scene right now because I just can't. My comrades, my soldiers are right there fighting with me. And we're trying to plow down that door to get into the church because there's someone there we need to take out, whatever. And like I'm bleeding out, and it's like, okay, I'm going to die. So I'm going to take out as many people as I can with me. It's awesome. But I love talking about the perks. Like even believe it or not, one of the ways to save the game is by drinking. Okay. And you actually have perks for drinking. There's a drinking skill in the game.
Oh God.
And it's funny because I honestly don't drink at all. I can be boring like that. I don't drink, but you know, when I talk to people who drink or don't like to drink, it's just an amazing feature in the game because there are drawbacks from drinking. Like your speech skill will actually go down if you drink. You won't be able to, you know. There's a perk if you drink enough and you pass out or whatever, you'll just magically wake up in your house the next day. Like not in your house, but in a bed the next day. So which we kind of laughed about because we're like, isn't that kind of like accurate where you just wake up and you didn't know how you got there? So the perks, man, it's like, you know, I like talking about that because like even for example, how about this one? There's reading a skill and perks in the game. So if when you first try and read about some important things, whether you're trying to even learn, like for example, the Hungarian language, because you might be able to learn a little bit of that, which means you can try and sneak in enemy camps if you wear their armor and try, maybe you can talk a little bit like them. When you first start reading, the letters are scrambled. So because remember back then, a lot of people couldn't, you know, read, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So at first it gets kind of tough to read because the letters are scrambled. But as you read more and you level up your skill, you'll be able to, you know, understand more. And then you can read about alchemy. So you can put more better tonics together for healing or even poisoning the food or whatever. But it's great because it's very intricate like that in our game to where you can there's no classes in our game. You can play every quest differently. Stealth. Now I'm just rambling on, but you know, I'm trying to tie into the fact that there's what you use is what you level up in and unlock bonuses or perks to really help you with what you want to do in the game. And it's just very intriguing to me because that's where you can have the different stories to tell, different playthroughs even. People want to play the game again because maybe you're going to want to, maybe you want to try and be that guy that fights with the bandits and screws around and just murders people.
Yeah.
You can do that. And you can loot anything in the game that if you can kill an NPC, because you can kill most of the, like 90% of the NPCs in the game with the exception of like the main guy, because we don't want you to break the game. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We don't want you to get like 40 hours in and you're like, I'm getting towards the end of the game and I just killed an NPC that I wasn't supposed to and then I have to start all over again. that would be horrible.
That would really suck.
But you can ruin certain quests. You know, you can have a quest that started that might have a few different ways to go and then have quests after that. And all of a sudden you kill that guy or girl and you just ruin that whole quest. And that guy or girl is permanently dead.
Man, that would suck if that was an important quest.
You know, and it might not be something that you actually had to do, but it could have been important and like that add several, you know, extra missions on. Like, you know, in Skyrim, you can go to different places and do different quests where it's like the mage and you can do a bunch of quests as being a mage. And like, again, I'm not talking classes, but I'm just saying, man, this quest could have went a certain way. And you decided to say, you know what? Screw you. You know, you're dead.
This game sounds like a nightmare for people who have decision paralysis.
Well, the cool thing is there's ways to redeem yourself because you will have reputation that you can redeem. And also there's ways where like we showed off in this one, it was Gamescom, I believe, E3, I don't know, but you had to, there was this guy, his name is Kunesh, and he owes you some goods. We showed off, this was like the very first, one of the very first, or part of the first quest in the game, and he owed you some goods and money, whatever. Well, he refuses to give them to you, and you want to try and talk him out of this or that, and he just wants to fight you. Well, if you lose this fist fight, because there is hand-to-hand combat, you know, he's not going to give you his stuff, and you feel like, oh, I'm screwed. But then, conveniently, there's some guys, some lads that want to get into some trouble, and you're like, okay, if I'm going to do this with you, you need to go help me beat the crap out of this guy because he owes my father and I some stuff. So there's ways to solve quests another way if you screw up, but then again, if you just want to kill everybody, there's going to be consequences to pay. But that's what I'm telling you, man. People are going to want to play the game all sorts of ways. It's going to be crazy. I can't wait.
So people could play this game and just be an absolute dick if they wanted to.
You can be that guy or that girl.
Sweet. One of these days, I always say this with games that have like moral choices and multiple ways to do things. I always say I'm going to be a dick one time. And every time I'll start off and I'm like, yeah, fuck this guy. I'm going to kill this person over here. And then I'll run into someone. I'll be like, oh, well, I don't want to hurt them. And then it's the slippery slope of just turning into a nice person again.
Yeah. And you can, again, you can redeem yourself. You can give alms to the poor in the town, the beggars. You can, you know, maybe take out some bandits or gangs that were given, you know, given the town or the village or the city or whatever, a hard time. But once that character that gave you that quest is dead, they're permanently dead. So watch what you do.
So there's no resurrection in this game.
There's no, so, you know, that's an interesting question. Yes and no. Because not necessarily, technically no, but at the same time, you will be able to play the game after you beat it. So, you know, after time goes by, you know, some bandits might actually respawn because we want you to, you know, be able to do things after the game. And you know what? Actually, I'm going to leave it there because I don't want to spoil anything, but people will potentially respawn. Potentially.
Gotcha.
So. It depends on the amount of time that passes in the game, but some won't. So, you know, without even trying to give, and again, I'm not trying to give any hints about there's no fantasy in this game, believe me. There's none of that, but, you know, we want it to have some replay value, and it's a video game after all.
Yeah, and that length of time is actually 25 years, and they didn't respawn, it's just their kid.
Sure. Sure.
Hey, you got to make up your own story sometimes, right?
Of course.
What happens when you die in the game?
Well,
I'm guessing that's going to happen frequently for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's actually kind of fun sometimes too, believe it or not. But you know, you go back to the last, because there are save points in the game. So you go back simply back to the last time that it was saved. Whether that's slept and then woke up, that's usually a save point, an important part in the game, or you had a drink or two. You know what I mean? To save
the game. So the blackout save file.
Yeah. So we made it that way so that, you know, you would have to really live with some of the decisions you make. You know what I'm saying? We want you to really think about the choices you make. Like, you know, I used to in some of the Fable games.
Oh man, I miss those games.
So do I.
This leads me to a question, because my favorite Fable game isn't actually a Fable game. It's Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one.
Yeah. The pitcher, what's his name? Kurt Schilling.
Schilling. My biggest gripe with that game was the level cap. It was one of those things where I didn't even finish the game yet and I was at max level. Will I run into something like that in Kingdom Come if I like focus on doing all the side quests, doing everything I can, killing all the enemies I run into? Will I hit a level cap in this game, or is it just one of those things where you can level up as long as you're still doing things?
Well, you know what? That is a question where I will say that you will see. You will see, my friend. And I will at least tell you this too, is that when you play the game, you know, there's going to be you're not going to be able to level everything up in the game really, maybe unless you spend a lot of time playing after the game, of course. But even then, it's going to be really hard to do because there are so many different things that you can level up in weapons that, you know, I would say that. Yet that won't even necessarily be as much of a concern as you think, because when you do play this game and you see all the choices you can make, you will be more than happy to do another play. That's a bold opinion of mine, but I do believe that you're going to see a lot of playthroughs for this game because of all the choices you can make and all the different approaches you can do.
Does the game have like a new game plus mode, or is it basically just starting from scratch when you want to play again?
Well, when you play again, well, right now as is, you know, you will start fresh, like you're starting a brand new game. That's basically my, you know, what I can tell you for now is that's, you know, you start a game again and you're going to play it as if it's your first time ever playing it.
Makes sense.
So, you know, but I will say that, you know, and that's not even on this note, maybe this is just on a side note, but, you know, we're going to be supporting this game for a long time. And, you know, there will be DLC, there will be even modding to some extent after release. And it'll be interesting to see what the community comes up with, based within reason, of course, and what we do after launch.
Will there be any form of modding on consoles, or will that be a PC-only thing?
So right now it's looking like we're really focusing on, that what we can do with modding for PC. You know, you never know about the future, but right now it's just PC.
Yeah, because I know consoles are slowly starting to dip their toe into the modding scene with, I think, Skyrim and I think one of the farming simulator games has modding of all things.
Yeah.
Which is very, very odd.
Well, but, you know, it's interesting because we have a game based on realism, right? And so, you know, that's why there's a lot to consider when it comes to modding in our game. And the story and all sorts of things, but who knows, man? Because we have nothing really to talk about at this point with that, but there will be more to come for sure.
You mentioned DLC. Is any of that stuff in the planning stages now? Is it going to be like story content? What kind of plans are there for that?
Yeah. So what I can tell you at this point is there's some things that we really wanted to make into the final version of the game, and while we don't have any specifics just yet, I'll just say there's some stuff that we still want to try and put into DLC that we had talked about, you know, more in the beginning. And also, you know, there's going to be, let's put it this way. There's going to be DLC. I will tell you that there's going to be DLC.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm not sure what there's going to be, but I'm definitely looking forward to getting as much time in with this game as I can. But this game aside, what are you playing right now? What games are you enjoying?
Yeah, so when I do have the time or make the time, I really love Ghost Recon Wildlands. I say that, but I play you know, with the exception of, my goodness, I we're working so hard right now in the game. I'm just playing pretty much Kingdom Come. But or if I let me correct that, stand back or rewind a minute, because with my kids, I play Mario Kart and Breath of the Wild, because that is something I can play just on, you know, when I'm hanging with the fam. But on my own time, Ghost Recon Wildlands, I just finished up Neo. I don't know, a few weeks ago or whatever. I love Neo. I love, you know, like in before that, you know, I Dark Souls 3 I finished not too long before that. Before that, I did Doom. I love Doom. But yeah, right now it's Wildlands when I can. And eventually I'm going to go on to The Witcher 3.
Nice. Yeah, that's a pretty damn amazing game.
Absolutely.
That kind of leads me to another question. Witcher 3 has enhancements and updates for Xbox One X and PS4 Pro. Are there any kind of enhancements or improvements for those consoles with Kingdom Come?
Yes, they will be enhanced on both consoles. Absolutely. Day one.
Is there any information on what kind of resolution bumps or frame rate bumps we'll see?
Well, what I can tell you is we just talked about this last week, actually, that, you know, what we were able to get, and this is also, keep in mind, with the CryEngine, because we use the CryEngine and it's fantastic, but, you know, we can only do so much with even the engine we use in CryEngine, and we're getting it up to, I believe it's 1440p on the One X, and 1080p on the PS4 Pro.
Nice. What kind of frame rate?
Well, that we are, believe it or not, we are still, like, you know, I mean, the game is pretty much just about done, right?
Yeah.
But I will just put it this way, that the frames will be better on the, you know, enhanced versions, but we're going to get it as best as we can.
Hey, you still have a month until release, so plenty of time to optimize as best as you can.
We are going to optimize until the second that we can, and that's coming up very soon. And even then, we're going to be supporting the game, like I said, so we're not going to stop supporting it.
Yeah, that's always a good thing when developers support the game. I know we've seen a few games come out recently that developers just like, you know, here's the game, we're kind of done with it, do what you want with it. And it's good to hear that developers are going to stand behind and support their title.
Absolutely.
My last question, you mentioned playing Mario Kart and Breath of the Wild. Are there any Switch plans for Kingdom Come?
There are not.
Just too intensive for the console?
I mean, basically, that what we were able to do is, you know, we were able to get it out for PS4 and Xbox and PC. And, you know, that right now, that's what we plan on sticking with.
Hey, makes sense.
Yes, sir.
But, Rick, it has been fantastic having you on the show. That's all the questions I got for you. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Well, I mean, again, you know, our game releases February 13th on, you know, Xbox, PlayStation, and PC. And, you know, check us out, KingdomComeRPG.com, and on YouTube, Warhorse Studios. We have a lot of videos to look at, a lot of some recent updates to, you know, even videos on combat, and just even the choices you make in the game. And, you know, check it out, guys. I guarantee if you check it out, and, you know, from what we've talked about on this podcast, if you're even remotely interested, you know, get the game. You won't regret it.
Sounds good. Well, again, thank you very much for coming on and chatting with me about the game. I cannot wait to get my hands on it next month. Do you have any final words to end the show?
Well, I really appreciate support from you, from the fans. You know, without the support we had in the Kickstarter, we wouldn't be here. And we're just really excited to have so much support for our first game in our new, you know, in our studio. So I just am humbled, and I say thank you to everyone who has supported our game.